Radio Krishna presents stories from the Vedic scripture, the Srimad Bhagavatam. Originally written in Sanskrit several thousand years ago by Srila Dwaipayana Vyasadeva, it was translated into English by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder and spiritual guide of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Your narrator is Amala Bhakta Das. And now today's story entitled Dhruva, the Child Saint. This story occurred millions of years ago, just after the creation of the universe. Uttanapad, the king of the earth, was relaxing in the royal chambers with Suruchi, his favorite of two queens. Suddenly, Suruchi's little son Uttama climbed onto the king's lap, and the king patted him with fatherly affection. Just then, another young boy, who was only 5 years old, tried to climb onto the king's lap. He was Dhruva, the son of Suniti, the other queen. Although the king loved his sons equally, just to please Queen Suruchi, he refused to welcome Dhruva. Then, with great pride and malice, Queen Suruchi rebuked Dhruva in the presence of the king. "My dear child," she said to Dhruva, "surely you are also the king's son. But because you are not born of my womb, you do not deserve to sit on the king's lap, nor on the royal throne." "If you desire the throne, you must first satisfy the supreme personality of Godhead Vasudeva, also known as Krishna, by undergoing severe austerities. Then, when he favors you, you shall still have to die and take birth again, but in my womb, before being crowned emperor of the world." Just as a snake breathes heavily when hit by a stick, so Dhruva, stricken by the strong words of his stepmother, was breathing heavily out of great anger. When he saw that his father was silent and did not protest, Dhruva immediately left the palace and went to his real mother, Queen Suniti. When Dhruva reached her, his lips were trembling in anger, and he was crying grievously. Queen Suniti lifted her son onto her lap and listened attentively as the palace residents, who had heard Suruchi's harsh words, related everything to her. Suniti quickly lost her composure and became like a leaf burning in the forest fire of grief. Lamenting and breathing heavily, Suniti addressed Dhruva, "My dear son, don't become vengeful, for if you inflict pain on others, you yourself will suffer from that pain. What Suruchi said is true. Your father is ashamed of me. He doesn't consider me his wife or even his maidservant. It is a fact. You took birth in the womb of an unfortunate woman." Suruchi told you to worship the lotus feet of Lord Vasudeva. So, if you want to sit on the same throne as your stepbrother Uttama, you must immediately execute Queen Suruchi's instructions. Take shelter of Lord Vasudeva, who is very kind to his devotees, and worship him. Lord Vasudeva is so kind to his devotees that if you go to him, then the combined kindness of millions of mothers like me would be surpassed by his affectionate and tender dealings. When everything else fails, Vasudeva is able to help his devotee. I can see that only he can mitigate your distress. Considering his mother's instructions carefully, Dhruva immediately fixed his determination and left the palace to seek out God. Soon the news of Dhruva's quest reached the wandering sage Narada, a pure devotee of the Lord. He was struck with wonder at the 5-year-old child's fierce determination, and he wanted to test Dhruva's strength of purpose for himself. So Narada went to Dhruva, touched the boy's head with his all-virtuous hand, and spoke to him. "My dear boy," Narada said, "you are only a child, attached to sports and other frivolities. Why are you so affected by words insulting your honor? Don't be dissatisfied. The ways of Lord Krishna are very wonderful. Therefore, an intelligent person accepts his destiny and is satisfied with whatever comes, be it favorable or unfavorable. Besides, the process of yoga you have chosen to perform is very difficult, even for experienced mystics. It is better that you go home." But Dhruva could not accept the words of the saint. "My dear lordship," he said, "you have kindly explained how to attain peace of mind. It is a good instruction, but I am covered by ignorance, and that kind of philosophy does not touch my heart. I know I am very impudent to reject your advice, but it isn't my fault. It is because I was born in a family of warriors. With the arrows of her harsh words, my stepmother has pierced my heart, so your valuable instructions cannot stay there. My only desire is to occupy a post within this universe more exalted than that yet achieved by anyone else. Therefore, O learned sage, please tell me of an honest path I may follow to achieve the goal of my life." Dhruva's words pleased Narada and evoked his compassion. The saint said, "Your mother's instruction to serve Lord Vasudeva with devotion is actually just suitable for you. You should completely absorb yourself in his service in the following way. First, go to the bank of the Yamuna River in the forest of Madhuvan, for there it will be very easy for you to become purified. Bathe 3 times daily, and after each bath, sit calmly and practice the 3 kinds of breathing exercises. Then meditate patiently on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudeva. The Lord's face is very beautiful and pleasing in its attitude. He never looks displeased, and he always awards benedictions to his devotees. His lotus-like eyes and broad forehead are all very beautiful. His entire body is decorated, and he wears a valuable jeweled helmet and yellow silk garments. Indeed, in every way the Lord is very pleasing to the eyes and mind of the beholder. When Narada finished speaking, Dhruva accepted the sage as his spiritual master and bowed down at his feet. Then he went to Madhuvan Forest, by the bank of the Yamuna, to execute devotional service. Meanwhile, Narada went to the palace of King Uttanapad and assured Dhruva's father, who was distraught at the disappearance of his son, that the boy was under the protection of Lord Krishna. Hearing this, the king gave up all his duties and simply thought of his son Dhruva. In the forest, Dhruva began to worship the Lord just as Narada had instructed. During the first month, Dhruva ate only fruits and berries every 3rd day, just enough to keep his body and soul together. In the 2nd month, he ate only dry grass and leaves every 6th day, and he continued his worship of Lord Krishna. During the third month, he remained completely in trance, meditating on the form of Lord Vasudeva and chanting the prescribed mantra. In this month, his only food was water, and that only every ninth day. In the fourth month, having become a complete master of the yogic breathing exercises, Dhruva lived only on air. Every 12th day he would inhale and exhale, and this was how he sustained himself. Finally, by the fifth month, Dhruva had controlled his breathing so perfectly that he was able to stand motionless on one leg and concentrate his mind fully on the Supreme. When Dhruva thus captured in his heart the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the refuge of the total material creation and the master of all living entities, the universe began to tremble. Just as when hundreds of people are sitting in a flying airplane, they each share in the total force of the airplane. So when Dhruva's minute energy was perfectly identified with the Lord's through pure devotional service, his energy became as powerful as the total cosmic energy. Thus, the pressure of Dhruva's big toe pushed down half the earth, just as an elephant being carried on a boat rocks the boat left and right with his every step. Also, Dhruva's severely restricted breathing choked the cosmic breathing process. At this time, all the demigods became greatly dismayed and prayed to Lord Krishna for help. After reassuring the demigods, the Lord traveled to the Madhavan forest on the back of his great winged carrier, Garuda. When the Lord arrived, Dhruva was standing there in meditation. He could not at first perceive the Lord externally, for he was deeply absorbed in contemplating the Lord's form within his heart. Suddenly, Dhruva could no longer see the Lord there. The lad became perturbed, and his meditation broke. But as soon as he opened his eyes, he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead before him, just as he had been seeing him in his heart. Overwhelmed with divine ecstasy, Dhruva fell prostrate at the Lord's feet. Dhruva wanted to glorify the Lord with suitable prayers, although, being a small boy, he did not know how. Knowing Dhruva's desire, the Lord touched his conch shell to the boy's forehead and imparted to him the transcendental inspiration known as Brahma Maya. Thereupon, Dhruva understood the absolute truth and his relationship with all living beings, and he offered Lord Krishna his deliberate and conclusive prayers. My Lord, by your unbroken transcendental glance, you are the supreme witness of all intellectual activities. You are eternally liberated. You exist in the state of pure goodness as the changeless Lord in the heart. You are the original personality of Godhead, and you are eternally the master of the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Thus you are always different from the ordinary living entities. As Lord Vishnu, you maintain all the affairs of the entire universe, yet you stand aloof and enjoy the results of all sacrifices. Hearing the sincere praise of Dhruva, Lord Krishna said to him, "My dear Dhruva, you have piously executed your vows. I know the desire within your heart. It is an ambitious desire, very difficult to achieve, yet I shall favor you with its fulfillment." Having benedicted Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead left the Madhuvan forest on Garuda's back and returned to the spiritual world. However, Dhruva was not very happy. He was ashamed of the material demands he had held in his mind when the Lord appeared before him. Alas, he thought, how unfortunate I am. I approached the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, who can cut the chain of repetition of birth and death. But still, out of foolishness, I prayed for perishable things. With my materialistic vision, I saw my brother as my enemy, and I lamented within my heart. I am like the ignorant pauper who begged the emperor for a few broken grains of husked rice, even after the emperor had offered him anything he wanted. Thinking in this way, Dhruva made his way back to his father's palace. King Uttanapad, who had feared that Dhruva was dead, considered himself the most wretched person for having rebuffed his son. So, when a messenger came from Narada to inform him of Dhruva's imminent return, the king could hardly believe the news. Very eager to see the face of his lost son, he mounted a chariot, gathered a procession of his family and attendants, and left the city to greet Dhruva. On seeing the boy approaching from a distance, the king got down from his chariot in great haste and hurried to meet him. Breathing heavily, King Uttanapad at last embraced Dhruva. Dhruva had changed. Now he was completely sanctified by the spiritual touch of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. Then Dhruva's mother and brother welcomed him back with tears of ecstasy. Even his stepmother, Suruchi, appreciated his innocence. With tears of sincere feeling, she blessed him, "My dear boy, long may you live." As Dhruva entered the capital city, the residents praised him jubilantly. They had decorated the entire city with columns of banana and betel nut trees, as well as bunches of fruit and flowers. At every gate there were burning lamps and large water pots adorned with multicolored cloths, strings of pearls, flower garlands, and hanging mango leaves. The domes of the city's palaces glittered, as did the domes of the beautiful airplanes hovering over the capital. In time, King Uttanapad enthroned Dhruva as emperor of the world. Then the old king detached himself from worldly affairs and retired to the forest. Soon King Dhruva and his two queens, Brahmi and Ila, raised a very beautiful family. But tragedy struck when Dhruva's brother Uttama met his death in the Himalayan mountains at the hands of a Yaksha tribesman. Soon afterward, Suruchi went to search for her missing son, but she died in a forest fire. When he heard of his brother's death, Dhruva was overwhelmed with grief and anger. Desiring revenge, he mounted his invincible chariot and set out single-handedly for the Yaksha city, Alakapuri, in the Himalayas. Arriving there, he blew his conch shell very loudly. Unable to stand the resounding vibration of Dhruva's conch shell, the ferocious Yaksha warriors came forth from their city and attacked Dhruva. When Dhruva began to kill them by shooting 3 arrows at a time, the Yakshas, 130,000 strong, countered by shooting 6 arrows at a time. Then they began to shower Dhruva, his chariot, and his chariot driver with feathered arrows, iron bludgeons, swords, tridents, lances, pikes, spears, and other weapons. The sun of King Dhruva seemed to have set within the ocean of the Yakshas. But just as the sun suddenly breaks through the fog, so Dhruva's chariot suddenly appeared from within the armies of the Yakshas. When Dhruva's wonderful bow twanged and his arrows hissed, the hearts of his enemies filled with grief. His arrows first scattered their countless weapons, just as a blast of wind scatters clouds. Then his arrows pierced the shields and bodies of the enemy, just as thunderbolts pierce mountains. Those Yakshas who somehow survived began fleeing. None of the enemy soldiers stayed in martial formation. But soon the Yakshas began conjuring up fearful illusions. Consequently, Dhruva heard a tremendous sound, as if the entire ocean were rushing upon him, and he saw a great dust storm coming at him from all sides. He heard thunder and saw lightning, and then a severe rainfall started. But it was not an ordinary rain. Falling through the sky were blood, mucus, pus, feces, urine, marrow, and trunks of bodies. Next, a huge mountain fell from the sky, and from all sides rained hailstones, lances, clubs, swords, and enormous chunks of stone. King Dhruva also saw groups of mad elephants, lions, and tigers, along with many large, angry-eyed serpents vomiting fire, all coming to devour him. Finally, as if the end of the universe were at hand, a fierce ocean with foaming waves and great roaring sounds came rushing toward him. Just at that moment, when he was completely overpowered by the illusions that the demoniac Yakshas had conjured up, a company of great sages appeared before Dhruva to encourage him. "Dear Dhruva," they said, "may the all-powerful Lord slay all your formidable enemies. You have nothing to fear, for you are a soul surrendered to him, and you have chanted his holy name, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Simply by chanting and hearing the Lord's holy name, anyone can be fully protected from fierce death. Therefore, the all-merciful Lord has already saved you, his dearmost devotee." Encouraged by the sage's words, King Dhruva sanctified himself by touching water. And then he took up a special arrow made by Lord Krishna himself. As soon as Dhruva joined this arrow to his bow, the apparitions created by the Yakshas disappeared, and the golden-shafted arrows with feathers like a swan's wings flew out from his bow. The arrows entered the bodies of the Yakshas with a great hissing sound, just as peacocks enter a forest with tumultuous crowing. Those sharp arrows dismayed the enemy soldiers. They became almost unconscious, but a few Yakshas managed to collect their forces, and in a great rage they again attacked Dhruva with upraised weapons. But Dhruva saw the Yakshas coming and cut them to pieces with his arrows. At this time, Dhruva's grandfather, the wise and powerful Manu, saw that his grandson was killing many innocent yakshas who had had nothing to do with his brother Uttama's death. Out of compassion, Manu approached Dhruva to give him good instruction. "My dear son," Manu said, "please stop. To become unnecessarily angry is not good, for this is the path to hellish life. Now you have gone beyond the limit by killing many offenseless yakshas. Furthermore, you have angered the demigod Kuvera, who is related with the yakshas. For these reasons, please stop this killing." King Dhruva took his grandfather's kind words to heart and returned to his capital city. During the rest of his reign, Dhruva rendered devotional service unto Lord Krishna with unrelenting energy. He possessed all godly qualities. He was respectful to the Lord's devotees, very kind to the poor and the innocent, vigilant to uphold religious principles, and thus all the citizens regarded him as their father. In this way, over many, many years, Dhruva favorably executed the duties of a king. Finally, he handed over the charge of the royal throne to his son. Dhruva realized that the Supreme Lord has created this cosmic manifestation just to bewilder the living entities, as a dream or phantasmagoria would bewilder them. So he left his kingdom, considering his body, his treasury, palaces, pleasure grounds, army, friends, wives, and children to be creations of the Lord's illusory energy. Thus, in due course of time, he retired to the forest known as Bhadarik Ashram in the Himalayas. In Bhadarik Ashram, King Dhruva fully purified his senses by bathing regularly in the crystal clear water. Fixing himself in a sitting position, he controlled his breathing and completely withdrew his senses from all external stimuli. Then he concentrated his mind on the form of the Lord and entered into trance. Because of Dhruva's transcendental bliss, tears flowed incessantly from his eyes. His heart melted, his limbs shivered, and the hairs all over his body stood on end. Transformed by this state of divine ecstasy, King Dhruva completely forgot about his bodily existence and became liberated from material bondage. Just then, Dhruva saw an exquisite airplane, as big as a house, descending from the sky. It looked as if the full moon were approaching him, illuminating all 10 directions. 2 beautiful associates of Lord Krishna were in the plane, and seeing that they were personal servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dhruva immediately stood up, offered them his respects with folded hands, and chanted the holy names of God. The 2 servants of Krishna, named Nanda and Sunanda, addressed King Dhruva. "Our Lord has deputed us to take you to the spiritual world, where even great sages and demigods cannot go. Please come with us and live there eternally." To Dhruva, these words were as sweet as honey, and he immediately offered his obeisances to the servants of Krishna. Then Dhruva worshipped the airplane, and while he did so, he became as brilliant and illuminating as molten gold. Just as Dhruva was boarding the wonderful airplane, death personified approached him. Completely unafraid, however, Dhruva put his feet on the head of death and then boarded the plane. From the sky, drums sounded and voices sang, and the demigod showered Dhruva with flowers. However, just as the transcendental airplane was about to leave the earth, Dhruva remembered his mother Suniti. He thought, how can I go to the spiritual world and leave my poor mother behind? But Nanda and Sunanda understood his mind, and they showed him that Suniti was going there too, in another plane. While Dhruva was passing through space, he saw all the planets of the solar system. Then he passed beyond the seven planetary systems of the great sages, and finally he reached the self-effulgent planets of the spiritual world. Thus, as he had desired, Dhruva had obtained the most exalted post within this universe, the Pole Star. And at last, because of his unflinching service to Lord Krishna, he went back home, back to Godhead. Today's story was entitled Dhruva, the Child Saint, and was produced by Radio Krishna at the KHQN studios in Los Angeles, California. It was derived from the Vedic scripture, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and was translated from the Sanskrit by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder and spiritual guide of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The adaptation for radio appeared as a story in Back to Godhead magazine, published by the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust in Los Angeles. Your narrator was Amala Bhaktidas, and the engineering and musical direction were under the direction of Vaibhavi Devidasi. Radio Krishna presents Stories from the Vedic Scripture, the Srimad Bhagavatam. Originally written in Sanskrit several thousand years ago by Srila Dwaipayana Vyasadeva, it was translated into English by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder and spiritual guide of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Your narrator is Amala Bhaktidas. And now today's story entitled Prahlad, the Child Saint. A vicious storm raged through the darkness. Fierce winds hissed again and again and uprooted gigantic trees. Thick clouds covered the sky and lightning flashed as though laughing. The ocean with its high waves wailed as if stricken with sorrow. Jackals and dogs howled ominously, and birds flew shrieking from their nests. The twins, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, were being born. They belong to a race of people called asuras or demons, so named because they generally disobey the orders or rules of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, who is an incarnation of Lord Krishna. Their archenemies were the suras or demigods, who usually obey the Lord's commands or regulations. Day by day, year after year, they grew more powerful, more evil, and more dominant over all the other demons who made alliances with them. Then, under the direction of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, the demons set out to conquer the demigods, the administrators of the universe. In their war for universal power, the demons enjoyed many victories. But at last, Lord Vishnu himself killed Hiranyaksha. His brother's death overwhelmed Hiranyakashipu with grief and rage. He bit his lips and gazed upward with eyes whose blazing anger filled the sky with smoke. He took up his trident, glanced around fiercely, bared his terrible teeth, and began to speak to his demon friends. "Oh, my friends," he roared, "Lord Vishnu is supposed to behave equally towards the demigods and demons, but now he has taken the demigods' side and killed my very dear brother Hiranyaksha. For this I shall sever his head from his body, and with his profuse blood I shall please my dead brother Hiranyaksha, who was so fond of drinking blood. Only then I shall be pacified." First, Hiranyakashipu sent his demoniac friends throughout the world to wreak havoc on the innocent and the pious. And then he set out to fulfill his own evil plans. Hiranyakashipu not only wanted to rule the universe and possess all mystic perfections, but also, and most important, he wanted to become immortal. To achieve these seemingly impossible ends, he went to the valley of the Mandara Hill and began performing severe austerities. He stood on his tiptoes and kept his arms held upward and his eyes fixed on the sky. By the intensity of Hiranyakashipu's exertion, the hair on his head began shedding a light as brilliant as a supernova. All the rivers and oceans seethed, and all the mountains and islands on the surface of the globe began trembling. Stars and planets fell from the heavens, and fires blazed in all directions. So long did Hiranyakashipu remain in his painful position that grass, bamboo sticks, and finally a huge anthill covered his body. The ants devoured his skin, fat, flesh, and blood, until only his skeleton remained. Seeing his ghastly condition, the demigod said, "The malicious Hiranyakashipu has been devoured by his own sins, just as a serpent is eaten by small ants." Thus encouraged, the demigods, headed by Indra, launched a fierce attack upon the demons. Showing unprecedented strength, the demigods massacred the demons, and to save their own lives, the demon generals scattered in all directions. They fled from their homes in great haste, forgetting their wives, animals, and household belongings. Finally, the victorious demigods plundered the palace of Hiranyakashipu and arrested the pregnant Queen Kayadu, one of Hiranyakashipu's wives. As King Indra, the leader of the demigods, led Kayadu away, the great sage Narada appeared on the scene. "O King of the demigods," Narada said, "you should not so mercilessly drag away this chaste wife of another man. Release her immediately." But King Indra said, "Within this woman's womb is the seed of the great demon Hiranyakashipu. Therefore, let her remain in our custody until she gives birth to the child. Then we shall release her." Narada replied, "The child within her womb, who will be known as Prahlad, is completely sinless. In fact, he is a great devotee, a powerful servant of Lord Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. You will not be able to kill him. Upon hearing this, King Indra honored the words of the exalted Saint Narada and released Queen Kayadu. Then, having defeated the demons' armies, the demigods returned to their celestial kingdom. Narada brought the queen to his hermitage, and, assuring her all protection, he requested, "My dear child, please remain here until your husband returns." Kayadu desired the safety of her unborn child, so she stayed in the care of Narada, serving the sage with great devotion. Because Narada is naturally very kind to all fallen souls, he instructed her on religion and transcendental knowledge, and his words were free of any material contamination. While the queen heard his teachings, the child within her womb also listened attentively to Narada's spiritual message. Thus, even before his birth, Prahlad received his spiritual education. Meanwhile, other residents of heaven approached Brahma, the foremost demigod, to complain to him that the scorching light still emanating from Hiranyakashipu's head had made their planets uninhabitable. Thus informed, Brahma and the other demigods went to see Hiranyakashipu to pacify him and end his severe austerities. "I am astonished to see your endurance," exclaimed Brahma upon seeing Hiranyakashipu. "Despite being bitten and eaten by worms and ants, you are still keeping your life air circulating within your bones. This is certainly wonderful. By your severe austerities, you have won my favor, and I am prepared to give you whatever benedictions you desire." After speaking these words, Brahma sprinkled spiritual water on the skeleton of Hiranyakashipu. The demon now blossomed forth in a youthful body whose lustrous golden limbs could withstand the striking of thunderbolts. At once Hiranyakashipu addressed Brahma, "Please grant that I not be killed by any created living being, that I not die inside or outside any residence during daytime or night, nor on the ground or in the sky, that I not be killed by any weapon, nor by any human being or animal. Indeed, that I not meet death from any entity, either living or non-living, that I have no competitor, that I have sole lordship over all living beings and presiding deities, and that I acquire all mystic powers." After Brahma had granted him all these requests, Hiranyakashipu exclaimed, "At last! Now I am immortal and invincible! Now I shall challenge Vishnu and avenge the death of my brother!"